Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Lou Ann Crane.
And I'm Ryan Dobson, and our host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson.
Well, Ryan and Lou Ann, I'm sure that both of you know that I have been a passionate supporter of the U.S. military for decades. Mm-hmm. And it's made up of some of the finest men and women this nation has ever produced. And they make sacrifices every day to protect our homeland and all of us. Throughout American history, hundreds of thousands of these warriors have given their lives or suffered disabilities to keep our enemies at bay and to defend our liberty. By the way, isn't it interesting that people don't talk much about liberty and freedom anymore? It's just rarely mentioned. If you go back 50 years or 100 years, I have done a lot of reading, and it was common for the average citizen to value his liberty and to talk about it. We don't do that anymore, but I still believe it. And the sacrifice that our armed forces are making today in Afghanistan and Iraq and elsewhere is still going on. Now, I also appreciate the spouses of those who are maintaining homes and raising children without their loved ones. That's tough, too. So, in short, that's the background for our program today, because our political leaders, beginning with our president, are, in my opinion, undermining and weakening our military by instigating policies that amount to social engineering. And I have invited Elaine Donnelly to describe what's happening at this time and to discuss the implications of those changes. Elaine has been our guest on radio programs for the past 20 years or so. She is an authority and has a right to be so. She's the founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness, which advocates high single standards in training. And you're going to hear more about that in our discussion today. She also supports sound priorities in military and social policies. She was appointed by the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces by President George Herbert Walker Bush. That was in 1992, and I asked her to join me on the radio shortly after that to talk about that commission. She also served as a member of the Defense Advisory Committee of Women in Services from 1984 to 1986. So she does know what she's talking about. She's written many articles on military personnel issues, including an article fairly recently entitled Constructing the Co-Ed Military, which is where we're headed with our discussion today. That article, by the way, was featured in Duke University's Journal of Gender Law and Policy, which is a very prestigious publication. And Elaine, you're listening to us. You heard my introduction. And first, I want to welcome you here and then ask you if I have overstated the case here and how you see it.
Maybe only on my credentials, because I'm just an individual, a woman who has been privileged to see firsthand the politics of the Pentagon. So that insight is somewhat unusual, because military people usually are not involved in politics. But I've never seen anything like what we're seeing now with the current president, because even though President Bill Clinton made his move that Congress blocked to have open and professed homosexuals in the military, the drive for women in combat is only now beginning to reassert itself in a way that causes me even more concern.
Elaine, I've shared this on the air before, but I think it warrants repeating. The first time you came with a Lieutenant Colonel Ron Ray, and the two of you talked on that day about your concerns about women in combat.
Yes.
And I've been on the air for 35 years, and we had the greatest response to those two programs of anything I've ever aired. We had more than 50,000 people who called or wrote or contacted us because of their agreement with what you said. And now, all these years later, the American people are prepared to accept women in combat.
Well, that remains to be seen. Our mission today is to motivate your listeners, to motivate their members of Congress to do something about what is happening now. You need to get on the phone or send a letter or an email and say to the member of Congress or the Senate, what are you going to do about this? If you do not intervene, Congress, that is, the administration will succeed in forcing our military women in great numbers, not just a few. Significant cadres was the phrase that was used. It means a critical mass, a significant number of women who don't want to be treated like men, but who would be ordered, if the military decides to do so, into what are now called direct ground combat units, such as the infantry, the armor, artillery, special operations forces, even Navy SEALs. This administration, with a stroke of the pen, January 24, the lame duck outgoing Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, announced that henceforth women's exemptions from direct ground combat will be eliminated. They're trying to cut out of this process the Congress. Even though the Congress has the constitutional responsibility to make policy for the armed forces, they're also trying to cut out of this decision families, American families who care about their daughters, their nieces, the girl next door, the woman who wants to serve in uniform. Many of the women in the military today are single mothers. They are probably not even aware of how this policy change may affect them. And the American people are not yet aware of what is going on, because there's a lot of misleading terms out there. And what it probably would be a good idea to start with some of these misleading terms. Mm. So that we can get a clearer read on what's really happening.
Why don't you do that?
Okay. The first misunderstanding is that women would be, quote, allowed into direct ground combat. The word is required or ordered. There is nothing voluntary about where you serve in the military once you decide to join. So there is no reason to believe that if women choose, well, I don't think I want to go into the infantry, that they would be able to decide. No, it does not work that way. The second big misunderstanding is that standards would remain the same. Sometimes even people who should otherwise know better, people like Senator John McCain, said women and Navy SEALs, well, yeah, as long as they can meet the same standards. Well, the standards will not remain the same as they are now. That would be impossible for several reasons. Physical differences between men and women, we know, because the Marines, in a briefing to the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services, September 2011, not that long ago, said women have, on average, 20% lower aerobic capacity, that's for endurance, 40% lower muscle strength, 47% lower lifting strength, 26% slower marching speed. Now, what does all this mean? It doesn't mean a whole lot if you have a job in the Pentagon or you're in some position where physicality doesn't matter. But in direct ground combat, the units that attack the enemy, it certainly does matter a lot. In fact, that's the third big misunderstanding. What do we mean by direct ground combat? Women have served with courage in the wars since 9/11. We are so proud of them. The war situation in Iraq and Afghanistan is different right now, but it could very well change to something different in the next war. We don't know what the future will bring, but this is for sure. The mission of infantry and the other units, artillery, armor, special operations forces, Navy SEALs, these are the small tip-of-the-spear units, the ones that attack the enemy. So even though our women soldiers have been serving in harm's way in a war zone, what is sometimes called a combat theater, sometimes they are subjected to attacks. Sometimes incident-related contingent combat occurs. They need to be prepared for that. Mm-hmm. But women who have served in these wars have not been in direct ground combat. Now, women cannot do the same thing as men. And the only way to make them equal is to lower the standard. In fact, we know this. The tip-off was on January 24. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, sat there at the Pentagon, gave a briefing, and he said, well, he was asked, what if the standard is too high? He said, well, if the standard's so high that a lot of women can't make that standard, we will question whether it needs to be that high. Mm-hmm. That questioning, of course, implies that it will be lowered, and it will, in order to avoid injuries.
That's breathtaking, Elaine.
Well, it's what's going to happen. I think anybody who thinks this through realizes standards will change. They might end up being equal, but they won't be the same as they are now. So that leaves men less prepared for the contingencies of combat, and it also hurts women because they don't have the same opportunity, the same equal opportunity to survive or to help fellow soldiers survive in a direct ground combat environment where you're attacking the enemy. Now, this is not the same as barring discrimination against women. We all support that. In fact, the Pentagon was ahead of the civilian world in banning discrimination against individuals. What we're talking about now is quite different. In fact, this report says this is not the same as individual rights. This is group rights. This is demographics. This means that anyone who does not support this agenda to have diversity metrics, a fancy name for quotas, if they don't support that, according to this report, they will be denied promotion right up to the 3- and 4-star level. We are really on the path for the kind of social change in our military unlike anything we've ever seen before. You have to make life more difficult and more dangerous. And speaking of dangerous, there's a serious problem that, again, did not exist 20 years ago. That's the issue of sexual assaults in the military. Mm-hmm. According to an Army report, the number of assaults has doubled since 2006, and increases continue at the rate of 14% per year. Now, there is no way in the world that anyone can credibly say, although General Dempsey did say this on January 24, putting women in direct ground combat, that will make that problem better. No, it's going to make it worse. Because if you extend a problem existing in the support units right now into direct ground combat battalions, you're not going to make it better. You're going to increase sexual tension, the kind of turmoil that causes people to do inappropriate things. And it's not just the assaults. The issue of romantic relationships has gotten worse. We've seen in the Navy, commanding officers and executive officers of Navy ships are being fired at the rate of 2 per month. This has been going on for the last 3 years. And most of those firings have occurred because of issues of sexual misconduct. All of these things Congress can deal with. Your audience, and if Congress becomes involved and they do something serious to restore sound priorities, it does not have to be this way. But right now, this administration is trying to cut Congress out of the picture. They want to get away with this, and we just can't allow that to happen.
Ms. Donnelly, you've talked about a couple of things, and I want to try to tie them together a little bit. You've talked about lower standards for women in combat, forced diversity, forcing women into ground combat units,
yes.
Direct ground combat units, and the increase in harassment. Now, of course, all harassment is wrong. We would never condone that. But if you're lowering the standards for a group of people that are going to be in direct ground combat and you're forcing them into those units, you're creating an unsafe environment for the rest of the soldiers. And if they're feeling like their lives are in greater danger because a certain group is being forced into their group, mm-hmm. Is that where the harassment is coming from, saying, well, we don't want you in this group and we're going to harass you until you leave?
Well, that's a good question, Ryan. There's a number of reasons, but when there is tension between men and women in any branch of the service, quite often it has to do with concern about double standards and the perception and the reality of double standards in the military, in training, in assignments. Favoritism is death to the concept known as unit cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
Unit cohesion is defined by mutual trust for survival in combat. If there are members of a team that people feel they cannot trust to, as they say, have their back in a combat environment, that increases tension. And sometimes people express tension in inappropriate ways. Unit cohesion can also be affected when people develop exclusive relationships, sexual relationships. And our military should have policies that encourage good behavior, discipline, not indiscipline.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble is, when the Pentagon comes along and says, well, we're going to put women in direct ground combat, we're going to pretend that everybody is perfect, that everybody is a saint, that all of these tensions can be waved away with more training, more sensitivity training, I think our women deserve better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And they deserve members of Congress taking this issue seriously.
Well, we talk a lot about equality and fairness, especially in the public sector. Should the military even involve itself in fairness or equality amongst its ranks?
Well, actually, the military is there to defend the country. So when we try to superimpose on the purpose of the military the agenda of egalitarianism, this is a problem. Because we have to break it down. What do we mean by equality and civil rights in the military? This is worth addressing as well. The military was ahead of the civilian world in saying we will recognize merit on an individual basis. Racial differences did not matter, do not matter. All the military had to do was give the order to overcome prejudice, and that is exactly what happened to the greatest degree possible. But when the military tries to take the same approach in issues involving sexuality, it's a big mistake. This administration thoroughly believes that the rights of LGBT personnel in the military are the same as civil rights in the classic sense, and that makes no sense. In fact, the diversity agenda, as we mentioned before, the diversity commission agenda takes individual rights and turns the concept on its head. Instead, they say individual rights and merit don't matter. The only thing that matters are group rights and the advancement of women as a faction or a demographic group, as if that is the most primary consideration.
Excuse me for interrupting. I want to get as many questions in as possible.
Okay.
But I'd like you to talk a little more about what you just referred to, having to do with the intimacy of men and women being in very close quarters in combat situations.
Yes.
It's not like anything else in life. And it's probably more stressful than anything else in life.
Well,
and
that's
to
right.
have men and women sleeping in the same tents in a combat situation, or the use of makeshift toilet facilities or no toilet facilities, and you've got many spouses at home being aware of the contact between their husband or wife and people of the opposite sex, that is a major concern for me.
Well, it is. But what we're seeing, or what we have seen in the previous war, the wars that have happened in Iraq and Afghanistan, we ask a lot of these military women. They've put up with circumstances like that, especially in the early months of the war. If we pretend that sexuality doesn't matter, we put more stress and strain probably on women than on men, although it certainly is no picnic for the men either. These are the kinds of issues that really do not arise unless you try to pretend that sexuality does not matter. It's the policymakers in the Pentagon who are to blame for creating a problem that could have been avoided. But what we need to do is to put into law an updated version of women's combat exemption. And it's the only way to take care of another issue we haven't brought up yet, and that is the issue of selective service registration. The Supreme Court has upheld women's exemption from selective service obligations. It starts with registration at the age of 18 because of only one reason. You don't register or draft anyone for military service unless there is a war and there is a need for what the Supreme Court called combat replacements. Now, if women are not used as combat replacements, there is no need to register them for selective service, and the exemption was upheld as constitutional. But take away that rationale, everything changes. Then the ACLU goes into court again, and this time they will likely win because the Supreme Court will no longer have a policy to which they can defer. And someday, unsuspecting civilian women, and we're talking about little girls in grade school today, may be faced with this obligation in a future war that no one ever expected.
Elaine, that comes right back to your very first point, that still the American public is a little misled in thinking that this is an option. I can't tell you how many times that I've been in a conversation and they'll say, but Luann, no, we're not forcing them. We are just saying that no longer will we prevent them. You need to go straight to the heart of that and make that point very clear. This is going to be required.
That is right. The only thing voluntary about military service is when you raise your hand and take the oath and you join. After that, you are subject to orders to go anywhere in the world, to put your life at risk, to do things you otherwise would not do. In the armed forces, you don't get to wear what you want, have your hair done the way you want. You don't get to choose your hours or where you are at any given time of day. That's why we honor and respect the sacrifice of our people in the military. And you, enlisted woman, you're going to go to that infantry unit because we need to have more women to compose a critical mass or a significant cadre. At that point, this young woman, the young mother who joined because of the medical benefits, which is very understandable, she's going to have a very rude awakening. And you don't get to walk away from military obligations. Once you join, you must fulfill the obligations that you undertake. Again, this is a small percentage of people in our military, but they are so important. For those of us who support the troops, it's not just putting a bumper sticker on your car. In order to support the troops, you must speak and say things that they cannot say. This is a very special institution, but when flawed politicians impose on the military flawed agendas, it's the people in uniform who pay the price. That's why it's up to civilians, men and women, moms and dads, uncles and aunts, people next door. Everybody needs to say, look, we don't want this to happen to our military. And members of Congress, what are you going to do about this?
That's absolutely right. Mrs. Donnelly, as much as we're talking about fairness and equality, and it seems like this current administration is trying to force the supposed fairness into our military, can we really expect our enemies to treat our soldiers fairly? Do the American people, are they ready to see a woman captured by a terrorist and tortured and put on screen? How are the American people going to react when we're confronted with those kinds of images?
Well, there's no such thing as fairness on the battlefield. That's for sure. Combat is not fair. In many cases, it's not even civilized. We don't ask anybody to fight for our country in close combat unless there is a good reason for it. National security is the only reason that any president should send our troops off to war. We have seen women, I guess 136 names are on a list in an article on our webpage, 3ws.cmrlink.org. These are the names of women who have given their lives in the wars since 9/11 in Afghanistan and Kuwait and Iraq. Every time I have to add a name, it is so sad. I always feel deeply saddened. And yes, of course, when men are lost, we feel sad about that too. But a number of these women are single mothers. Some have little children. Many of them died under circumstances that certainly caused great grief to their family, as well as the American people. I don't see this as a good thing because we have so many women, an unprecedented number of women killed in these wars. But some feminists seem to think, well, this is a good thing. This means women are equal. This means we can put them into direct ground combat. I just don't buy that whole philosophy.
Elaine, this program has just burned past. I mean, you've got so much to say, and I don't even want to really stop. I want to keep talking to you right now, and we'll let our listeners hear next time what you're about to say. Is that all right?
That sounds good to me. Thanks so much.
Stay on a roll, okay?
Okay. Right.
And, Doctor, I know they probably have really appreciated all of this information because, quite frankly, they're not going to hear it in the mainstream media.
Well, Luann, that's part of why we're here at Family Talk, to keep our listeners informed on issues that impact the family. Mm-hmm. And this topic definitely meets that criteria. For those that want to learn more, you can find a link at drjamesdobson.org to our guest's organization, the Center for Military Readiness.
And you'll also also find a host of articles there addressing this subject. Also at our website, learn how you can contact your own congressman to encourage them to address this issue, as our guest Elaine Donnelly has suggested today. If you are ready to make that call right now, which we hope you are, the Capitol Hill switchboard number is 202-224-3121. Again, 202-224-3121.
And our guest, Elaine Donnelly, will be featured in my dad's March newsletter. Yeah. So look for that in your mailboxes later this month. And if you're not yet on our mailing list, we'd love to be in touch with you. Call us to get signed up at 877-732-6825 or at drjamesdobson.org.
And just before we go, if you would like to partner with us financially here at Family Talk as we continue to defend what's right in this ever-darkening culture, now would be a perfect time to hear from you. You can donate at drjamesdobson.org or at our Facebook page, or even when you give us a call. That number one last time, 877-732-6825.
Thank you for your consideration of that gift and for joining us today. Please make plans to be with us tomorrow when we'll hear more from Elaine Donnelly right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.